Hello and welcome to the Everyday Adventure Podcast. My name is Nikki Bass and I will be bringing you thoughts and ideas and hopefully some inspiration on how to build more adventure into your everyday life. Hello and welcome to season two of the Everyday Adventure Podcast. It is so good to be back and I am so excited for all the guests I have lined up to bring you over the course of the next few weeks. So today we are going to be kicking off with the wonderful Preet Chandy. Preet is an army physiotherapist who loves adventure and finding new ways to push her limits. Having played tennis full-time as a teenager, she then transitioned to ultramarathons and is now training for a solo expedition to Antarctica. So I thought the snowy theme was perfect for January, and particularly if you happen to be in the Northern Hemisphere and are definitely feeling the chill right now. I first connected with Preet over Instagram. And what I've really loved about her approach is not just her willingness to share these amazing adventures she's been on, and some of the more creative approaches she's come up with lockdown as well, but just so her willingness to show the vulnerable side, to show when things have been more challenging, have been more difficult, and how she's found ways through that and around that. And it really has made me want to reach out and find out more about her journey. So it's an absolute pleasure to have Preet here, and I hope you enjoy this interview every bit as much as I did. So Preet, it's absolutely wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for agreeing to chat to me.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here too, Nikki.
So my first question has got to be really, what has inspired you? What's motivated you to take on this immense challenge of trekking across Antarctica? Where did the idea come from?
Well, for a long time, I wanted to do something big, something that inspires people to believe they can achieve anything. And, you know, I started with just doing a half marathon, my first half marathon. And then I did a marathon and I was like, oh, you know, I managed to do that. And I thought, oh, why not try an ultramarathon? And I remember booking a 50-mile ultramarathon called Dusk Till Dawn in the Peak District, which is an overnight run. And I was like, oh, it'll be fine. You know, what's the worst that could happen? I went with a bag that was bigger than everybody else's. It took me a really long time. I think I was one of the last people to come in. I'm pretty sure I was sick straight after, or like a few hours after as well. But it was brilliant. And I was like, you know what? If you can, you know, I can do that. I can do anything. And then the challenge just got bigger and bigger. I remember reading about Marathon des Sables a few years ago, and I was like, wow, that sounds amazing. You know, that sounds like just something out of this world. And then I thought, why not, you know, put my name down? Why not go for it? And I did. And, you know, I completed it and it was fantastic. And I was like, you know, what else could I do? And, you know, thinking of bigger challenges, and I'd read like of other people who'd gone to Antarctica. Lewis Rudd, who's my expedition manager, has done quite a few incredible expeditions in Antarctica. And I remember getting hold of his number and I was too nervous to actually call him to start with, because I was like, you know, what's my experience? What makes me qualified to want to do this solo expedition in Antarctica? So I waited a few months and then, you know, I finally called him and he was so, so nice on the phone. I don't know why I waited. And, you know, it was great because he didn't say, you know, that sounds a bit crazy. Like, what's your experience? He was completely on board and invited me to his house. So what inspired me to do this? Just, I think, wanting to push my own limits, but also just show that actually, you know, you don't have to be some elite skier. I wasn't, you know, brought up with, surrounded by people who've done like amazing things in polar environments. You know, you can start from anywhere. I remember looking on Google, like, you know, how do you get to the South Pole? Literally not knowing much at all, apart from, you know, hearing kind of the legends of Shackleton and such. And I think maybe it started from wanting to inspire my 8-year-old niece. And, you know, me and her have little adventures. And I want her and other young people just to see that actually anything's possible. You know, this started as an idea and it's great. It's amazing, I think, that you could just have this idea in your head and then it can just become bigger and bigger. And this is a thing now. This is, you know, something I'm training for. I went to Greenland, you know, literally got back a few weeks ago. So yeah, it's about inspiring people and just, you know, showing actually, like I said, nothing's impossible. If you've got an idea, why not go for it? see what could come out of it.
I love that you Googled how to get to the sand.
I was like, you know, how did that happen? Can I walk? Can I wear skis? I really didn't know. You know, I literally looking on Instagram, on Google, just everywhere I could find. But I love that that's where I started, you know, and like with anything, you research it, you learn more, you meet people who've, you know, who've been to Antarctica and done expeditions there. And I'm always learning from people. And this is a, you know, it's a solo expedition, but it's not really like with anything, you know, there's so many people helping me. And I really want to bring as many people as possible, as I can onto this journey. So when London Marathon was cancelled, I was thinking, you know, we're in isolation. What can I do in at home, basically, that I could potentially bring other people into? So I decided to do 24 hours of step ups in the garden. It's a London flat, so there's no steps inside. So luckily the weather was good. And, you know, I put the message out to friends and family first saying, do you think people would want to join me in their own homes doing step ups and send me videos? And they were like, yeah, you know, I think so. And I put a video out just on social media. And it was fantastic. You know, loads of people joined me. I did from 9 a.m. On Friday to 9 a.m. on the Saturday. Was it 12 a.m. actually? And people joined me throughout. I think the only time it was quiet was probably from 3 to 5 a.m., which is fair enough. But people sent me their videos of them doing step ups and their kids doing the step ups. And it was just fantastic. So, you know, I really enjoy bringing people together and being part of the journey as a whole.
Wow, that is amazing. And it's something that's come through, I think, for so many of the guests I've had on the show, that you start off, in a way, it's a personal and it's a solo idea because it's something you're doing for you, but how quickly that expands to form a community around you too. And that actually that can be part of the, you know, such a rewarding, hugely rewarding
100%.
Club. So, I mean, it's one thing to Google how to get to the South Pole, but I guess it's another to actually take the steps that actually involves in reality.
Yeah.
And I can imagine there've probably been some pretty big hurdles you've had to face along the way. I mean, I'm just wondering what sort of jumps into your head as some of the most challenging things that you faced?
So the biggest challenge, I think, has definitely been funding the expedition. So I am, you know, trying to get the word out as much as possible so people can hopefully see what I'm trying to achieve. And like I said, wanting to bring people on this journey with me. And obviously with COVID, trying to plan as well. So I wanted to go to Greenland to do an expedition this year. And while we're in isolation, I wasn't sure if I would be able to get there. And then it turned out most of the expeditions were cancelled, but I could get to Greenland. And I was looking everywhere, you know, can I find someone to go with me, a guide to go with me? So I also, you can't cross Greenland alone. Eventually found a guide to come with me. And then it was getting to the west of Greenland where we would have to isolate for 5 days, take another COVID test, and then travel to the east before even starting the expedition. So, you know, a lot of logistics planning before even getting onto the ice. It was decided or confirmed that I was going to go to Greenland about a week before. So then I was running around England, just borrowing everything I could from people, borrowing kit from different people. And, you know, we got there, we got to the east of Greenland, ready to do the expedition and set off on the ice about 14 days into the ice. So we'd already had a few storm days, probably more than usual. And 14 days in, we realized that we wouldn't make it to the other side in time. So I had to make the difficult decision of turning back, and then got stuck in the tent for 6 days in a storm. Now that was very challenging. It felt to me like being on exercise, but not knowing when the exercise was going to end. It was, you know, the gusts were sometimes 60 miles per hour. It was just something else. You'd step outside the tent. So we had to keep shoveling the tent out of snow because it kept covering almost half of the tent. And it was every few hours. So literally midnight, we'd head out for 2 hours, digging ourselves out. We'd come back in, put the stove on to warm up, and then back out at 4 a.m. till like 6:30, and then back in the tent. And it was relentless, honestly. It was quite tough. You know, my extremities would get cold so quickly. We go out, and then when we got back in, we'd fill our Nalgene water bottles up with hot water, and I'd put them straight on my toes and like just hug one, getting in our sleeping bag just to try and get warm again. And eventually, the snow stopped kind of covering the tent more. And actually, because we were only on about 2 liters of fuel, we couldn't keep running the stove. And so we stopped heading out. And then, you know, things like even wanting to go out to go to the toilet, you don't really want to head out of the tent. So you're not, you don't realize you're not eating as much and you're not drinking as much. And we started to just put the stove on first thing in the morning when we'd wake up and then kind of in the evening. But we realized, I think it was, I'd sleep a little bit and then wake up about 1 a.m. because it was cold. And then just trying to get to sleep when, you know, everything's a bit damp, like my down jacket, my down sleeping bag. And then who I was with would wake up at 4. He's like, should we put the stove on? I'm like, yeah. And then that hot water bottle would make such a difference. So it was definitely challenging towards the end. But I think, you know, I've learned so, so much from it. And I think, you know, probably more so than if it was a smooth crossing, going through that, yeah, not even just the storm at the end, but the conditions throughout were challenging. It was just, you know, no days were given to us. It was either a whiteout where it's like a blank wall in front of you, high winds. I got a frost nip on the edge of my nose, which kind of went a bit blue and then into a scab. And now it's kind of like a shadow that's healing slowly. And that we'd have snow, dragging the pork in snow is just, you know, it's hard work. None of it glides. And then the storms we had, and we even had rain as well when we were on the crevasses. So yeah, it was just, you know, it got to a point, it was quite funny when we were in the tent. It was like, this isn't going to end. We obviously needed to be extracted, and we were expecting to be extracted on the Monday. We didn't pack up the tent because the tent was basically, you know, half covered in snow. So that was going to stay. But we packed up everything else, went outside, and, you know, it's cold and it's still very windy at this point. Set up the HLS, waiting for the helicopter to come, and it didn't come. And we were out there for half an hour, and it's cold, and, you know, and then had to get back in the tent to call them on the sat phone to see what was happening, and trying to light a stove and the matches when your hands are so cold is actually quite difficult. And we got back in there and it was like the weather wasn't good enough for them to fly, so they weren't coming. Mm-hmm. And I'd actually written on the tent as well that we've been extracted by you know, in case in the next season anyone sees the tent, we've been extracted by helicopter and we're safe on Monday's date. So then we went back in the tent and then crossed out Monday's date, and we called them and they said they don't think they're going to be able to come for the next few days, which is when we obviously made the decision we're going to have to ration the fuel. And then Tuesday's date he'd written on there and crossed that out as well, and I was like, this is starting to feel like a horror movie.
Yes.
Like, and then on the Wednesday again we were expecting them to come, you know, he's like, what do you think? I was like, I don't want to get excited, because, and then he was like, no, I think, you know, the weather had calmed down a little bit then, so he's like I think they're gonna come. So went outside, one of us, so he stayed in the tent on the sat phone. And I went out and again set out the HLS, you know, so ready, all our kits there. And then it's like 10 minutes past the time they were supposed to be there, 15 minutes past, 20 minutes past. And he was like, I don't think they're coming. Like, he came out, he's like, I don't think they're coming. And I was like, and just, oh, my heart sank. Oh, I was like, just the thought of having to go back in. And then we heard it, you know, the wind as well. Every minute you think that's the helicopter. And then we heard it. And it was relief, definitely, at that point, because like I said, we didn't have very much fuel left. And it was cold as well. So we spent 27 days on Greenland Ice Cap, with an experience I won't forget. And I think I've just learned so, so much from it. And, you know, learned so much that will take me forward, and skills I'll 100% use in Antarctica.
Wow. I think it probably says something about your mindset that when I asked you that question, you started with funding rather than frost nip, really being stuck in Greenland in a snowstorm. I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, any one of those things on their own would present such an enormous challenge. I just think, you know, it must have been a bit like when you think of what being on a desert island is being like, waiting rescue and it not coming. Gosh. Yeah. And I remember speaking to you and you saying that actually even trying to get out of Greenland because of COVID presented a challenge in itself. So
it was logistically so difficult. I was like, everything that could almost go wrong. Just did, you know, flights were cancelled at every point. Our bags weren't at the other end. So I was in my expedition clothes the whole time. Luckily, I had a spare set of like underwear and socks and base layers. But yeah, literally, I was in my ski boots up until the point I got back to the UK.
Oh my gosh.
So it was just, it became kind of, you just have to laugh at the end. No. Do you know what I mean? It just became, I was like, this, you know, it's, yeah. But it definitely makes you appreciate the small things, you know, sitting on the toilet when I got back, just being warm, yeah, and dry. It just, it really does make you appreciate the little things. So that's good.
So I guess that sort of answers my next question in a way, which is around the unexpected benefits that come out of it. So toilets aside, I mean, what else have you, I mean, you talked a little bit about community, but is there anything else that you've experienced that you've just gone, that's not something, when I set out with this, I never expected that to happen?
Yeah, you know, I didn't expect that this many people would want to be on the journey with me. So, for example, when I was in Greenland and Lewis was updating my Instagram for me, and, you know, I wrote, I think, one a week pretty much, and he would have to prompt me and be like, do you want to do another update? And I didn't really expect people would want to read about it every day, you know, that, you know, would they really want to know what the temperature is today, what I've done every day, and coming back to see their messages. And I was like, oh wow, like people really do want to. So I'm definitely going to be better at, you know, posting daily updates when I'm doing these expeditions, because, you know, I think it's great that people want, and I want people in this journey with me. I think the other thing is just how much I've learned from this. I never expected that I wouldn't complete the crossing. You know, I thought actually, you know, I'll go, of course I will do the crossing. But actually that everything I've learned from not completing it and, you know, having, you know, pretty bad weather throughout, I think I've just come out with just so, you know, yeah, so much more really, like everything I've learned from it, and just having not just the skills I've learned in terms of winter skills of being in the Arctic, but just that mental resilience. And it's nice to know that I've got that there, I think, as well, just, you know, in that experience. Actually, I did that, you know, I came out of it absolutely fine, and it's just made me more determined, if anything.
That's so interesting, isn't it? And it, so it resonates so much with what we try to teach children, and what, you know, when we talk about actually failure being so important as a as a concept and as a lesson, as being sort of the best teacher in a way, that you learn so much more about yourselves in those situations where things aren't going according to plan. And that actually that gives you more of a sense, like you said, that actually enables you to feel more resilient, not less, because you found a way to manage it. Incredible. So we sort of know what's next, as in we've talked about the, you're trying to get across Antarctica. But I guess what are the next steps for you in that journey? What are you... you know, what are you hoping to set out to do over the next year or so?
So the next few months, I am going to be doing a lot of more focusing on strength and conditioning while I'm in the UK, dragging my tire around. So, and adding tires onto that as well. What I really wanted to do before COVID was go to each region of the UK and do like a 12 or 24 hour tire drag and have people join me. And that way, you know, I'm going to, you know, different communities and trying to bring people in part of this journey. That's a little bit difficult at the moment, but I really still want to do that at some point, you know, and do it in a safe environment when I can. On top of that, next year I'm hoping to do one or two more trips to Norway, again COVID dependent, because at the moment we have to quarantine there. And then, you know, Antarctica is definitely the goal for now, but, you know, when I've done Antarctica, you know, who knows, like the world's your oyster. There's so many possibilities, and like I said, the more you do, the more you realize you're capable of. So so I'm not sure what's after that, but I'm actually pretty excited to find out.
Amazing. Well, we'll have to watch this space and get you back on once Antarctica is, and find out what's next from there. Incredible. So if you had, I mean, there's probably people listening to this that thinking, you know what, just even the tire dragging sounds like an immense challenge, or the marathons that you've been doing. But if you had one piece of advice for somebody who wants to get started and live more adventurously, what would that be?
Don't wait. don't wait, believe in yourself, you know, take that first step. And I know some of my adventures now might seem, you know, more extreme to some people, but, you know, I'll always say one of my biggest achievements is still completing my degree, you know, when I had minimal GCSEs and no A levels. So regardless of what it is, you know, take that first step. And it, you know, regardless of what your background is, there'll always be people who, you know, maybe don't believe that you can do that, but believe in yourself. And, you know, I want to hear your story as well. So feel free to tell me about it and connect.
Amazing. Yeah. And like you said, actually, it's all about what's relative to you and your perspective, that actually for some people, some things are a challenge. For other people, you know, we've all got our own individual journeys that we're looking at, and that, you know, that constitutes a challenge for us. And you know, and that's starting now and starting small. Absolutely. So if people do want to connect or find out more about you, where can they go?
So you can go to paulapreet.com, which is my website. You know, message or email me from there, or follow me on Instagram at paulapreet. And yeah, I'm posting about pretty much all my adventures, and not just my adventures, but, you know, different challenges that I face along the way. So yeah, that's how you can find out more about me, and you know, like I said, feel free to contact me. I want to hear your stories too.
Incredible. Thank you so much, Preet. It's been such a pleasure to chat to you today, and I literally cannot wait to see where you go next and how this journey unfolds for you. Thanks again, and hope to, like I said, hope to have you back on once you're a few stages further along the journey too.
Thank you so much, Nikki. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I'm sure we will definitely speak again.
Wow, what a way to start season two. I really hope that you were as inspired by listening to Preet's story as I was. There were a couple of points when she was talking through what happened to her in Greenland. And, you know, just one of those events in itself would probably be enough to put off most people. But I think the way in which she embraces challenge and sees it as part of the journey, I find personally really inspiring. What I thought was really interesting was her point about, actually, sometimes it's, you can do these huge, immense challenges, but actually the things that we're sometimes most proud of are the things that we probably least believe we're capable of, and then we achieve them. So gaining her degree for Preet was such a huge achievement, because partly it's about the stories we tell ourselves about what we are and what we're not. And when we confront those beliefs, whether they're our own beliefs or others, but usually when there's something deep rooted in ourselves, actually that is immensely powerful. That is the huge adventure. And that is where you have that real transformation as well. I'd like to leave you with that thought for today. I really hope to see you back for the next episode for the rest of season two. If you'd like to find out more, if you'd like to get in touch, please do reach out to me. Probably the best place is on Instagram. I'm on Resilience at Work. Feel free to drop me a DM or get in touch. You can also find me on LinkedIn or on Facebook at Resilience at Work. You can also check out my website, resiliencework.co.uk. And you can find all of the podcasts, all the previous season, and this season will be listed there as I publish. So I really look forward to seeing you back here very soon with another episode. Until there, take care, and I hope to see you for some more adventures soon. Bye.